Okay, so there is no microphone. I'll speak louder. This presentation is very basic level, okay? I was told, you know, say something for the students who are around. You know, they might not know those formalisms. Okay, so, you know, this is not for my colleagues. So they all know, in fact, that the kind of results I'm presenting here have been for the most achieved by people who are in this room. So this is a smooth introduction to synchronous rewriting, which is a technique that is used more and more in natural language processing nowadays. I will, you know, give a brief introduction, what it is, and then we'll look into perhaps the simplest formalism that is used in synchronous rewriting, which is synchronous context-free grammars, okay? They are used a lot in several applications, not only machine translation, we'll see in a moment. And if there is, you know, yeah, I mean, if people are still following, you know, we can do something about, you know, a way of generalizing more general formalisms using synchronous rewriting, which are known as mildly context sensitive, another class of formalisms that is very important in natural language processing, what it has been, you know, in recent years. Okay, so let me start with the introduction to synchronous rewriting. So in a synchronous grammar is a generic term, you know, it's not a technical term, but it means that, you know, you have two or more context-free derivations that are synchronized. What does it mean? Here is an example, okay? So if you see a string of this kind with A to the N something and B to the N, and you see that basically, you know, these two are correlated. They're correlated for each N. You can have, you know, something here repeated here, same number of times. This means that, you know, there is some process that has at least context-free power, okay? People are familiar with context-free grammar, right? I'm taking this assumption. Now, what if this process, you know, is synchronized with another context-free process? And so what you get is that these n are all equal, and they grow all at the same time, okay? So this means that there are two context-free rewriting processes that are synchronized, okay? So this doesn't mean that you apply two rules in any place. You have to apply rules and, you know, continue to apply rules in the same place in a synchronous way. That will give you this effect, okay? This is what we use a lot in machine translation. But we use also, as we will see, we use also within the same single sentence for, you know, modeling more complex syntactic phenomena. Okay, so it's important that you remember this synchronization between, you know, this. So how is this achieved? Well, first of all, the term synchronous grammar, where does it come from? Interesting question. I was looking to the literature. My assessment is that it was invented in the computational linguistics community, this term, okay? It appeared, you know, in a paper 1990, as far as I can say, by Stuart Schieber and Yves Chavez. They were synchronizing two grammars, okay, two tree adjoining grammars at that point. But of course, the mechanism of synchronous rewriting is much older. It was known in the literature on formal languages or compilers with the term of parallel rewriting, okay? Since from, you know, the late 60s. and it is a hot research topic. It has been a hot research topic in the last 10 years. It is used a lot in machine translation, of course, because, you know, you can model two derivations for two different languages, but also syntax-semantic interface. And also in parsing, if you have complex syntactic structure, like discontinuous phrase structures, we'll see examples later, or non-projective dependency parsing, you can model this using synchronous rewriting. We'll see more later. So there is a convergence in computational linguistics of several areas that are adopting this mechanism, which is interesting to me. Okay, so different areas coming together with this system. So that was the, you know, very general introduction. Let's look into synchronous context-free grammar. This is perhaps the simplest formalism where you have an incarnation of synchronous rewriting. So, you know, the idea is pretty old. They were called syntax-directed translation schemata at the end of the 60s. They were conceived for compilers and translation. And you know, it was later rediscovered in the computational linguistic community for initially just for matching, you know, one language to another on the syntactic level, or else, you know, same language syntax to semantics, okay, like syntactic description to logical form, whatever. And you know, there are several formalisms. It's not several formats that have been using synchronous context-free grammar, like inversion translation grammars, and so forth. And they have been used, you know, for these are all formalisms designed for machine translation. And you know, the synchronous rewriting formalisms have been proved state of the art in 2005 in a work by David Chang, who is sitting here. So now we'll see how synchronous context-free grammars are defined. So in a synchronous context-free grammar, first of all, let's start with synchronous productions. A synchronous production is basically the pairing of two context-free rules, okay? We are familiar with context-free rules. You took two of them and you put them together under the condition that the non-terminals, okay, here I'm using the notation that non-terminals are uppercase and lowercase are the terminal symbols. So just look into the non-terminal symbols here. There must be the same number, the number of non-terminals in the two rules must be the same, okay? And there must be an alignment, a perfect alignment, like a bijection, between non-terminals of the first rule and non-terminals of the second rule, okay? So basically what this is saying is that, you know, on one side we use this rule, and on another side we will use this rule, and then we will have kind of, you know, a relation between these two non-terminals, okay, because they are aligned, and you know, this alignment will tell you that, you know, this constituent is realized in a language with a given order, and on the other language is realized with a slightly different order. So basically what you are doing is you are taking the components of a rule and making a permutation and displaying them in a different order. Plus, you are adding some terminal symbols or deleting some of them, okay? There is no restriction on the terminal symbols. All you need is that you are sorting, okay? You are reordering the non-terminals. And this will give you a very powerful mechanism, okay? Because this is a hierarchical formalism, okay? And switching to symbols way up on the tree will give you the effect that, you know, something in the final sentence is moved all the way down, okay? That's the power. You can do long distance, movements of. So here is an example of a synchronous context-free grammar, which I took from a paper by Kevin Knight. This is English to Japanese. So in this fragment, we use synchronous rules. First of all, we use them for translating the words. So like, for instance, music is a noun in English, and it is translated into a noun in Japanese, okay? So these rules are the bilingual dictionary. And here we have the rules for the structure. And what these rules are saying is that, like, a verbal phrase in English is, you know, can be viewed as the concatenation of three components. And that's the same also in Japanese. The verbal phrase is the concatenation of exactly those three components, but in a different order, okay? So slightly here we have 1, 2, 3, and you know, this is the alignment. The numbers are meant to represent the alignment. You see that 2 and 3 are switched, okay? And that switch will create, you know, the movement of something in the final sentence. Is it clear so far? Okay? All right, so now, synchronous context-free grammar, context-free grammar will generate strings. Synchronous context-free grammars will generate pair of strings, okay? And this, you know, relation between strings is what we call a translation. The rewrite relation is important, okay? We know how to do rewriting in context-free grammars, but we have to define it for synchronous context-free grammars. So what we do basically is that we use the alignment. When there are two non-terminals that are aligned, it means that we can rewrite them simultaneously, okay? And when we rewrite them, we introduce two new right-hand sides, And those two new right-hand sides have an alignment. And we have to rename those small indices in order to update the alignment relation. Okay, that will be clear in an example. So we want to rewrite verbal phrases in English to Japanese. So we use a specific rule that will introduce these two right-hand sides. And here is we have a specific alignment between the non-terminals. Now we pick up a symbol. For instance, we pick up VB2, which has index 4, and we rewrite it with this right-hand side. But at the same time, we have to pick up the aligned non-terminal, this one with the same index, and rewrite it with the right-hand side for the corresponding rule in Japanese, okay? And these two new right-hand sides have a specific alignment which should be embedded into the alignment we had before. This means that we have to rename those indexes, okay? That's important, but renaming is a mechanism that I guess you're familiar with, okay? So what this means is that when we are rewriting, we have these sentential forms, and in these sentential forms, we always maintain a perfect alignment between the non-terminals on the left and the non-terminals on the right, okay? And we use the alignment for rewriting. You have to apply synchronous rules to two symbols that are aligned, okay? You cannot just pick up the two symbols at random, okay? All right, is it clear? Questions? Okay, fine. So, what you get is basically, you know, the derivation can be represented as usual, as two trees. And we see that, you know, those two trees look very similar because, you know, there is, you know, a mapping between the number of nodes at the first level and the number of nodes at the second level. The only difference is that we have different words because we translate those words, and we have reordering of the phrases. Like, for instance, at the topmost level, we have been switching these two here, okay, VB1 and VB2, from English to Japanese. And this will, you know, move some of the right structure here for English to the center of the okay, so that's all the synchronous context programmer is doing for you. It's moving blocks, okay? But it is powerful because the rearrangement doesn't happen at one level. It will happen, it happens at several levels, okay? So that increases this hierarchical stuff will increase the power, okay? Then once we have the rewrite relation, we can define the translation, like, you know, the set of pairs that are generated by the grammar, the pairs of terminal strings. And that's it, basically. Of course, we want to put probabilities. We do this in the same spirit, that, you know, as following the same methodology for context-free grammar. Given, you know, we assign probabilities to each synchronous rule under the condition of the two non-terminals in the left-hand side. So, given A1 and A2, all possible ways of expanding those two symbols will sum up to one. This guarantees that we don't lose probability mass. So we, in the end, we get a distribution for our translation will be exactly a distribution. Everything sums up to one. And we can, in fact, define several joint distributions. We can have a distribution over a pair of trees that are translation one of the other, or string to string, or even a string to a tree, okay? We can do all these things. Here are the definitions, but I won't spend time on this. Okay, so from now on, I'm going to look into some of the problems that you want to solve with a synchronous context-free grammar. Okay, the first problem is the synchronous parsing problem. This is like the parsing problem in context-free grammars. But here you are given two sentences, okay, and you want to build a parse forest with all the pair of trees that are, you know, relative to U and V, okay? So you're given two strings, English and Japanese, and you want to find all trees for those two strings that are one the translation of the other, okay? So the parse forest is the set of all trees, but they should be represented in a compact way because there could be exponentially many. You just don't want to list them, okay? So there will be the parse forest will have to be represented in some compact way. We'll come back to this later. So synchronous parsing is not exactly translation because I'm giving you already the two strings and I want to know whether they are related by the translation. But this problem is related to training. When you want to train your model, you need to do this. So what's the difference between parsing a context-free language and parsing a synchronous context-free language? No difference, basically. You use the same algorithms. We use dynamic programming for parsing context-free grammars, parsing context-free languages, and we can extend easily those algorithms to synchronous context-free grammar. There is no problem at all. Okay? Those algorithms will work then. You know, this is, if you are familiar with parsing of context-free languages, like chart parsing, you know that the running time looks like this. You know, there is a linear dependence on the size of the grammar, and then there is some polynomial on the size of the string, okay? So now what we get here is basically the same thing, that this one will become basically, you know, the concatenation, so to speak. Well, it's not, it will be the max, but forget about this. So this will be the length of the two strings you're given, okay, to some exponent. This exponent, in the case of context-free grammar, is exactly, you know, the number of non-terminals you have in a rule. So if you take Chomsky normal form, there is one symbol in the left-hand side, two symbols in the right-hand side. Okay, this is a normal form for context-free grammars. So there are three, and you can parse context-free languages in n to the three, where n is the length of the input string. Now, the same formula holds for synchronous context-free grammars, with the sigma being the number of non-terminals in those synchronous rules. The problem is, as we will see later, that we cannot put a synchronous context-free grammar in Chomsky normal form. So we have to work with these very long productions, and they will affect the exponent here, the degree of the polynomial. So things become much more difficult in the sense that, you know, it is lower, okay, in the worst case. Okay? So how does it come? You know, I'll show you this through a very simple example. I'm assuming that you are familiar with chart parsing, okay? In chart parsing, you know, it's an algorithm, basically a dynamic programming algorithm for context-free parsing. Now, forget about this, okay? So assume that you have a rule with these non-terminals. What you do in context-free parsing is you start from the first non-terminal, then you merge with the second, okay? And you cover part of the right-hand side. Then you pick up the third one, so you go from left to right, basically. This is the classical algorithm, and you will complete the parsing of that rule, okay? So when you are done, you can, you know, say that there is the left-hand side symbol is covering this portion here, okay? You're familiar with this, right? Now, we have to parse simultaneously two rules. Now, remember that this is a synchronous production. The first, I'm using this convention, that the first non-terminal in the first production, the left non-terminal in the first production, is paired with the second, is paired with the symbol in the second position in the right rule, okay? So the alignment is represented by this horizontal line, meaning, you know, the third symbol here is displaced at the end in the second rule, okay? So this is like a permutation matrix, okay? We're just permuting, doing a permutation of the non-terminals. So now, what it happens is that when you parse, let's say you want to merge these two, okay, when you want to merge the first two symbols, you will cover this portion of your string, but on the other side, things are bad because the corresponding non-terminals are not at the same, you know, next one to each other, the next one to the other. Okay, they are separated, okay, they are displaced. So you have to parse these two simultaneously, and you have to, you know, create an edge in your chart that makes a record of this string, and this string. So three strings. It's more expensive. And when you expand this with the next non-terminal, it is even worse, okay, because here everything is smooth, but on the other side, you have three strings that are separated, and you have to record, to make records of all those indexes. So, you know, your edges in the chart parsing algorithm do not have two pointers to the input string. They will have 1, 2, 8 pointers, okay? So this is space consuming. And it becomes harder if we go on with the next symbol, it becomes harder and harder. What you get is basically this. Let me show you. This is important for something we'll say later. So if we parse, that is the space requirement, okay, and here we move left to right. If we parse by collecting symbols, you know, from left to right on one rule, you know, the space requirement increases because, you know, you will have to keep a record of several strings on the other side. At some point, you know, when you reach, you know, a maximum, and then when you are completing the rule, then basically the complexity will lower down because, you know, at the next symbols, for instance, for this rule, at the next symbol here, we are merging, you know, these three, so we reduce the number of strings we have on the other side, and the next, oops, there is no next step. So, but you see, it's going, you know, it will, at the beginning, it goes worse and worse, and then everything gets together connected, okay? So, this is why parsing is difficult. You might wonder, but this is difficult because you went left to right. Why don't you just pick up another ordering? Like, you know, first combine two symbols in the middle, and maybe that will give you something better. That's true. You know, if you change strategy, you get something, a curve which is different. It might, you know, be smaller, okay? So, that's true, okay? So, choosing the strategy is an important issue in synchronous parsing, okay? Now, two results I want to mention here. First of all, you're not going to parse this in polynomial time, independently of the choice of the strategy. This problem is NP-hard, okay? So in the worst case, you know, there is no polynomial time algorithm, you know. And also the choice of the strategy will, I mean, even if we want to live with something that is a high, you know, high degree polynomial, if you want to choose the best strategy, like the one that is, you know, that reaches, you know, the smallest worst case, choosing the best strategy is also an NP-hard problem, okay? So you have to work out, you know. Okay, this is in the worst case. We'll come back again to this problem because I want also to tell you something of what happens in when you deal with real data, okay? So this is, you know, the bad news. There will be good news later. But now let me switch to another problem that you might want to look at when you deal with synchronous context-free grammars, the translation problem. Here you're given a string, only the left string, say the English string, and then you want to produce a parse forest with all the trees for Japanese sentences that are translations of W, okay? So this is translation. This is what people use for the most. How can we solve this problem? One interesting solution is the Bar-Hillel technique. This is really important. I mean, I don't know, I don't expect people to be familiar with this, but Bar-Hillel, this guy, you know, in the 60s, or maybe the very early 60s, he wanted to show that context-free languages are closed under intersection with regular languages. This is something that you have seen, you know, in your first class in formal language theory. And his proof was very interesting because he took a context-free grammar and he took, you know, a finite state automaton and he will create a new context-free grammar which is generating exactly the intersection language. And the new context-free grammar is very interesting because it will represent all the trees in the original grammar that generate strings that are also in the regular language, okay? So there is a close relation. It was recognized earlier in the 70s that there is a close relation between the construction that Bar-Hillel used to intersect, you know, context-free languages with regular languages and parsing. And this is because in parsing we are given a string, but we can think of a string as a regular language with only one string, okay? So we construct a finite state automaton for that string, then we make the intersection with the context-free grammar, and we get a new context-free grammar that generates all the trees we are interested in, which is the parse forest, okay? So, in order to get the parse forest highly compressed, you do the Bar-Hillel, okay? This is what people, I mean, if you're familiar with parsing, maybe you have never seen this view of parsing as intersection, okay? But this is something that in computational linguistics is, you know, mentioned and used a lot. Now we want to generalize this to synchronous grammars. And this is easy, relatively easy. We want to translate English sentence to Japanese, so what we do is we construct a finite state automaton for the English sentence. And then we construct a finite state automaton for every possible sentence. Okay, sigma star means any possible sentence. Okay, and now we intersect our synchronous context-free grammar on the left with this string, which means, you know, you generate everything that has on the English side this sentence. And let's see what will happen on the Japanese side. Okay, so the intersection on the left with M1 and on the right with M2 will give you a new synchronous context-free grammar. That synchronous context-free grammar, if you pull, you know, if you smooth it a little bit, you know, throw away things that don't, that are not used, is a parse forest. Okay, so let me say more clearly. You have this synchronous context-free grammar, which is the intersection. You chop it off. You remove the English part. It's not like that you chop it into two, okay? You have to do something. But you chop it and throw away the English part and keep the Japanese part. That will give you a context-free grammar that generates all the trees that are translation of W. So that's basically translation, okay? So we're doing translation through parsing here, okay? Okay, good. Questions? So translation as intersection, that was an important point here. Another problem that might be of interest to the people doing speech, okay? So assume that you have an English sentence, you, and you want to translate it in Japanese in such a way that you give a prefix, like you want to translate you into a Japanese sentence that starts with V, okay? Someone is translating, is looking to the English sentence, it starts translating the Japanese left to right, okay? And so far he has come to some point in Japanese, okay? So now we want to compute the probability of all translations of our English sentence into Japanese that start with V, all the translations that start with V, okay? So if we compute this probability, we can use it to define distributions on the next Japanese word for a translation of English string U under the condition that the Japanese translation starts with a given prefix, okay? So this is, you know, the prefix probabilities are being, you know, studied a lot in computational linguistics, in parsing, but they were originally motivated by work done by Fred Jelinek and John Lafferty, you know, these prefix probabilities. You can compute those also for synchronous context-free grammars, okay? And it's not so difficult, okay? This is work that has been published, yeah. Okay, good. I think basically these are the problems I wanted to look at. So we are done now with, let's see, are we done? Oh no, there is another thing, important thing. Okay, talking about synchronous context-free grammars. I mentioned to you that we don't have Chomsky normal form here. If we had Chomsky normal form, life will be much easier. We could parse, you know, very efficiently. But unfortunately, we don't have Chomsky normal form. What this example shows is that, for instance, for these synchronous grammars, Chomsky normal form is impossible. Like, if you try to pick up two symbols, like C1 and D1, and, you know, merge them into a new symbol, F1, on the other side, C1 and D1 are not next to each other. C1 is paired with C2, which is here, and D1 is paired with D2, which is on the other side. So this means that if you want to replace this with F1, you will have to write three rules for F2, okay? Because, you know, F2 should have access to two different points here. And this is not a synchronous context-free grammar because of the three components, okay? So, and you might try other pairs, but it doesn't work. Any pair you pick up, you know, doesn't work. So no Chomsky normal form, okay? This was known, you know, since the early 70s, okay? But now, work by Daniel Guidel, who is sitting here, showed that, you know, if you look into real data and translation in translation domain, you know, those worst case are very rare, or else, you know, they do not affect the performance of the system. So basically, this is to say that you can, you know, for the most, use factorize, like translate your synchronous grammars into some either Chomsky normal form or some normal form where, you know, there are three or four, not many, non-terminals in the right-hand side. That will help you a lot in improving this curve, the space complexity curve, and also the time complexity curve, okay? So there have been, you know, the factorization problem, so is try to reduce the number of non-terminals in your rules by, you know, translating into kind of Chomsky normal form, like there must be strongly equivalent. So there has been a lot of research on this track, you know, where algorithms for reducing those rules, the size of those rules, running quadratic time, then n log n, and then by Gilden again in linear time, okay, in 2007. And these are very helpful in, you know, practice, because the, you know, it will simplify the grammar and simplify parsing quite much. Okay. Okay, that's it, basically. That's all I could tell you for synchronous context-free grammar. We still have some time, so very quickly, let me now move on. Okay, we use synchronous rewriting we generalize synchronous context-free grammars. Okay, and we will obtain interesting rewriting formalisms. So the first generalization we do is that we don't stick to two rules. We can have any number of rules. So we can have synchronous rules with three components, four components. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Set of, so you are a pair of strings with a word alignment. Will it be?
What is known about inducing a CFG that covers that?
Okay. That's a problem that has been investigated in the literature. And I didn't mention here. So, but the point is in this slide. If you use algorithms that factorize rules, okay, so this is, you have a long rule and you split it up into smallish rules that when they are composed together, they will give you the longer rule. So this technique that I was mentioning here, and I was using it to make parsing more efficient, can be used to induce structures. Like if you start with two strings and only the word alignment, then you try to, you know, you start with a rule that is generating all the left string and all the right string, and then you start, you know, simplifying that rule, you know, trying to factorize out pieces that are common, and that will provide you with basically the induction. You will induce the structure of your grammar. You will discover the rules. This is what people do, okay? So this is another application of this factorization problem. This is why factorization has received much attention, okay? Okay, good. Did I answer? Yes. Okay, very good. So now, just 5 minutes, then we can go. I want to say, you know, one more step. We can generalize synchronous rewriting, synchronous context-free grammars, okay? Use synchronous rewriting in a more general way. And we will reach a class of formalisms that are called mildly context-sensitive, like tree adjoining grammars, linear context-free rewriting system, you know, all these systems in computational linguistics are very, you know, very, you know, well known. So what you have to do, first of all, is drop the requirement that you have only two rules, okay? You can have three, you can have four, whatever you want, okay? Still, you know, we are carry over with this alignment between the non-terminals here. And the second step is that we don't care about, you know, there is no perfect alignment. So we mix up indexes. So you see, for instance, D3 here is not aligned with the D here or here. It is aligned with the D in the same rule, okay? So basically, you know, what we have is that we have rules that are made of several components, and there is, you know, a relation between some symbols And those symbols could be, you know, scattered over the right-hand side of all these components. Like B, for instance, is aligned with this one here, but not with nothing in this side here, okay? So if you use this kind of rules, which are a generalization of synchronous context-free grammar, what you get is, you know, more power. You can, like, derive trees of this kind, you know, where, you know, you are generating, you're copying a string. You generate a string here, A, B, 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 A, B, B, A, and you are simultaneously generating it also here. So this is a single string. This is no longer a translation, a single language where you have the copy language, okay? I'm not going to work out this in detail. What I wanted to say is that basically if you do that generalization, you reach what are known as mildly context-sensitive formalisms. And there are several of these formulas. Linear context-free writing systems, the most important, is exactly equivalent with the generalization of synchronous context-free writing systems, of synchronous context-free grammars that I showed you before, okay? So linear context-free writing systems are difficult to explain to, you know, to students because they have a definition with a function, they don't have a derived relation, they come all the way bottom-up, and, you know, my students have hard times understanding linear context-free writing systems. But, you know, if you view them from the other point of view as if they were synchronous rewriting system, then you get, you know, the top-down derivation and things are easier. And you can even prove interesting properties that will be very difficult to prove on the other, okay? So, so what we have seen is basically, you know, a syntactic variant of these formulas. And they are used a lot in computational linguistics. Like, for instance, there are tree banks in German that have discontinuous constituents. Like you have like a VP here with a gap in between, you see? There is a word here that doesn't belong to the VP. Okay, so the VP is in red. So this is our phrase structure with gaps, okay? To model this, you need these systems, the mildly context-sensitive system, which are basically generalization of synchronous rewriting. Or even for non-projective dependency grammars, this is also a widespread formalism in syntax, in parsing, where you know you have crossing of dependency, grammatical dependency relations. You can model this also using synchronous rewriting or linear context-free rewriting system. Okay, so this class of formalism is very important. And it is important to realize that this class of formulas is using synchronous rewriting. Okay, the same thing, parsing complexity has, for the generalized formulas, has the same formula as before. And you know there is this degree of the polynomial, which depends on the length of the strings. And so a lot of work has been done as well here to factorize those rules. And there are several results. But here, things are much more difficult. Like, we don't have a polynomial algorithm for factorization. And, you know, there is some work, but it is still, you know, an open problem how to factorize in certain ways. What is the optimal factorization, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that's it, basically, conclusion. We have seen that synchronous rewriting is used in several areas of computational linguistics, not only translation, but also syntax-semantic interface and syntactic parsing for discontinuous constituents and blah, blah, blah. We have seen that we can solve many problems using the intersection construction. I didn't spend much time on that, but this is important. And we have seen that the factorization, like reducing the size of those rules, is a very important research topic nowadays for in parsing in computational linguistics. Okay. That's it, basically. If you have some questions, otherwise, we go to lunch. Thank you.